He's the pride of Fairbury, an average Joe. Bill Dolman, the professor.
I had a 6 ACT in 1967. One time I got an A and my grandma beat me for cheating.
Now with Hale Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hour 2. It's Hale Varsity powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Connor Clark. Elijah is off to Colorado. Bill Dolman, pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports. The professor is in. Find him on Twitter at Bill Dolman. Catch him with the Average Joe Sports Show podcast. Billy D, we've had a bit of a fun Friday with the Regents saying yes to beer at Haymarket 9-2. Yes to beer at Bolin. And it got us thinking here, creative ways to get booze into a sporting event. Now, I confess to how it got done during my college era, and you don't need to tell the listeners how long it took me to get out of undergrad. You were there. You saw. But we've had between overcoats, wearing extra layers, Connor, the old Gatorade sure. bottle trick. DJ checks in and has at least a fond memory from that 06 shellacking by USC, where Stanley Havili had 4-3 straight fullback draws to the end zone. Pete Carroll running the fullback three times for an opening 7-0 lead. But way back in the day, the USC game, they came to town. DJ says USC fans gave me several shooters that I was afraid to ask how they got in. The cap was still sealed, so I felt okay. So DJ remembers that moment. The guys I sat with in the student section had a fake bladder, kind of a Wizenator type deal. That's how the captain, Morgan, got brought in to the student section. Iowa Russ's dad, they airlifted a keg at Kinnick in the 70s because they were the top of one of the sections in Kinnick, which was incredible. And Dolman, I need an 80s story, brother. I mean, how did friends of the firm get it done back during the Broderick Thomas, Steve Taylor era?
Well, you know, I'm amused by DJ because, I mean, how about those USC fans being prepared after the start of that football game, turning to Husker fans going, here, you might
you guys need
this.
A drink?
So they talked about great Nebraska hospitality. You know, I didn't realize USC fans had it in them. Here's
some medicine.
Yeah, you guys might need this. Colorado, they passed you something else.
You used to just walk in with a suitcase. Nebraska fans would just walk into Boulder with beer, and they wouldn't mess with it. There's several flask stories as well. The good old flask.
Yeah, you know, you never find more flasks than at a wedding party or at a football game. That's the only places you see flasks anymore. But back in the day, I mean, the Boda bag was the weapon of choice, and you know, that was, you mean, you mentioned the bladder, but I mean the Boda bag was just a leather pouch, you know, but they were so, I mean, they were so prevalent that they were like party favors back then. And you'd have Theta Xi and DG and Pi Phi and, you know, Sig Epps with, you know, stamped on the Boda bag as a party favor or something. And so there were so many co-eds going into games, you know, men and young men and women. And you just had this rope strap, you know, over one shoulder, and it went somewhere down by your side. And this is what I'm told anyway. Uh-huh. Remember, uh-huh. I worked in the athletic department.
You were
love
working.
Frat boy, Bill.
Yeah, my sophomore year on, I worked in the athletic department. The freshman year kind of escapes me. But, I mean, the Boda bag was just a staple of life in college back in the 70s and 80s. Mm. I probably still, I mean, let me look at my desk drawer. I might even have one.
Not that drawer. That's where the bottle is.
I think Devaney gave me one, in fact.
Okay. Bob's, how did Devaney roll? I mean, he had his own, all the ADs.
Quite well.
No, I know. The story of the, I mean, did he have the armored bar cart, I mean, with wheels?
No, it was there was a credenza or sink, you know, in his office that some people had to stock.
True or false? It was Bill.
I know you stocked shelves once.
Oh, I did, I was.
I guess we have that in common.
I was stocking dog food, brother. It wasn't for the man.
I wasn't.
Well, Billy, I need you to go down to N Street. Was that the Thursday the summons?
It happened a few times. Yeah, could you take here are the keys and could you go run a quick errand?
So you're driving his Cadillac. Could you see over the steering wheel? Was it like Goodfellas?
No, I could. I'm not sure he could. It was a little more unnerving when Bob would drive his car later in life than when I had it, but still a great experience nevertheless.
That's so good.
You know, but the Regents drug their feet on a lot of stuff, but boy, when that thing came on the docket today, that was next.
Boom. Mm-hmm. Easy.
Yep. So they might as well just open it up everywhere on campus. You know, we'll open up a place at the CoJMC and just let's just have neon lights and everything.
Really? You're going to wait till I leave to do that? Are you kidding me? Jeez.
Well, just get onto the bar, and they'll take care of you.
It is basically across the street.
So Tiger Shark's poison of choice was screwdrivers for days. That was his thing. He chimes in. Klausburn will be with us in 30 minutes with some harrowing stories of alcohol snuck in or seen, the motives in execution. Bill, let's talk a little bit here. Good story by On Three when it comes to changing the narrative. And you've got different narratives out there. So Penn State, right now, the narrative for James Franklin in Penn State is they're an underachieving program. When it comes to beating teams, they're supposed to beat their gold. They out-talent most, okay? And they win. They are not doing that Michigan or that Ohio. They've lost seven straight to Ohio State. The last time they beat Ohio State was that miraculous night game wideout where you get the blocked kick, right? And then it unraveled, and that kind of launched Penn State and Franklin. You have Cristobal at Miami now in year three. Great numbers at Oregon. Miami paid $22.7 million to get him out of Uncle Phil land.
Just to be the biggest frauds in college football.
And, yeah, and now he's...
That's how I feel about them, really.
No, they have a ton of talent. He's a good coach.
They are ranked in the preseason every year.
They are. They
every
are.
Every year.
And they can't always keep the talent. Their situation is in-game management's brutal. Special teams has been brutal. And then you have, guy down at Florida, Billy. And it's do or die for him, right? Because Florida fans are over him already. So when I get to the Nebraska narrative, and one guy that changed the narrative was Sark. Sark was dead man walking 2 years ago. You lose to Kansas, what the hell? And then you're in the playoff and things are good, and there's belief that Texas is just too big to fail. They'll win a championship because he's got so much talent down there. What do you believe the national narrative is on Nebraska? I think there's a lot of wait and see, but I think there's a lot of stock being bought because the national guys love Rule and they believe what he can do, and he's proven it at two other stops. So I think Nebraska is about ready to pop in a good competitive way, getting back to a team that can challenge for championships. I've not had any Kool-Aid. I've not had a red solo cup. But that's just following the program like we have. I think we feel good about where it's going. And you're not to that year three point at Nebraska where that's a national talking point. Into year two, though, Bud, what do you think it is on that national scale for Nebraska?
Well, a couple of things. What did Steve Sarkisian's first Texas Longhorn team do?
They underachieved. Yeah,
5-7. What was Matt Rule at Nebraska first year?
5-7.
Five mm-hmm. and seven. You know, and the patience, I think, runs thinner at Texas than it does at Nebraska. But I think given what Nebraskans have endured over the last 20 years, they do feel like there's a guy who's in charge that has the place organized and that there is a different feel than maybe even when Scott Frost took over, there was hope that Scott could do it. I think there's belief that Rule will do it. Okay. So Nebraska fans are I think on board with that. They've seen it. They understand the game. And to look at and see Nebraska had a ton of heartbreaking losses last year. So when you see that Nebraska in Rule's first year did not get beat by 30, did not get beat by, you know, 25, did not get beat by 40, and everything was a disaster, and they just, you know, I tended to, you know, looking back at Callahan's first year, I was like, well, that, you know, that's what I was left, so it doesn't really matter what I do. I think Nebraska had, you know, care and passion, and things, they just got some bad breaks, right? And and they were close. You know, every loss is a loss, but I think Nebraska could have very easily been 7-5 last year with a couple of more breaks and a few turnovers and whatnot. But that's the old if game. So Nebraska was reasonably close last year. And there's a lot of excitement in the program going into this year. There are a lot of players who could have left who decided to stay. So I think that's a narrative that may not be playing out as much as it should when you have Robinson, you know, for one, coming back, and then the talent that there might be at the quarterback position, that they can do some things. You've got a quarterback's coach. So, you know, I think there's every reason to believe Nebraska's going in the correct direction. But what people need to temper, though, what are the expectations down the road in the new era of college football? And I've been saying this for years, that, look, you have to hope for everybody. Everybody has to be thinking 9 wins is a great season in the new era of college football. You are not going to have a, you know, Georgia's got it going on right now, but eventually it's going to catch up because they may limit roster sizes. They may come up with a salary cap. They may come up with a players union. They may come up with all kinds of rules in the Super League and whoever's in charge that is going to create parity as much as they can in college sports, not just college football. So at some point, based on the rules that people are going to have to agree to, they're not just going to allow Michigan and Ohio State and Alabama or Georgia and whomever, Texas. The numbers are going to be spread out over everybody. The money is going to be even for everybody, right? I don't think you're going to see Major League Baseball distribution where the Dodgers have $8 billion and the Tampa Bay, you know, or Tampa Rays have, you know, $8 million. You're not going to see that. You are going to see, you know, salary caps and financial numbers that are going to be equal across the board. So you fans need to get used to seeing their team be great with 9 wins like they are in the NFL. And hope that you get into that what will be a 16-team playoff at some point, right? That's what it's going to be. And you're going to have conferences within the Super League. Nobody ever thought, if you thought there was going to be an 18-team West Division or whatever, not in the Big Ten, you're fooling yourself, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be conferences within the Big Ten. And so it's not going to be the West. It's going to be
the NFC, you know, South.
Right, exactly. You're going to have that kind of stuff where you're going to have 6 teams you're going to be playing, and you hope you win and maybe get a playoff bid and whatever bowl games look like. But 9 wins, 10 wins is going to be a great season. And thinking of you're going to win the college football playoff and be a dominant program like Georgia and Alabama have been for the past 10 years, it's just not going to happen anymore.
That goal is going to shift, yes, to get to 8-9, win some big games, clearly.
Yeah.
Be in that top of mind awareness when it comes to how the rankings come out, but be in position to be in that top 4, because what you're going to have, fellas, in the Big Ten is whatever they break into the pods, potentially, you're going to have your 4 best. You're going to have your NFC championship, your AFC championship, and your Super Bowl is going to be that Big Ten championship game. So you're going to, if you're 1 of 4 in this new Big Ten moving forward, we believe, then top three probably should still get in.
Nebraska might be playing in the Big Eight. You know what?
Based on how, yeah.
If you're looking at what, you know, names are going to be for, you might have homages to conferences of the past, you know, legends and leaders. Let's just call this group of, hey, there's the Big Eight or the Big Seven or the Big Six,
Bill's
right?
Just trying to reverse history right now. We're
going
to go
right,
legends
we're going
leaders,
into the, you know, we're going forward.
Pac-10.
But look, there's no, I don't, I said 16 teams in the playoff. I cannot believe that if you're going to have 70 or whatever, that people are going to say, yeah, it's okay if the two best don't have to play an extra game. They were always going to set it up that Georgia and Ohio State are always going to get a bye, and then they're only going to have to play two games to the title. TV is not going to let that happen, and everybody else is not going to let that happen. So, and for those people who say that Penn State is underachieving, look, again, if you can win 8, 9, 10 games a year, you better be pretty happy with that. And maybe you get into your conference playoff and move on.
Hang tight. I need 5 more minutes on the other side, if that's good.
I got 5 hours. What
all
the heck?
All right. Bill Dolman continues on with this. A little overtime with the Pride of Fairbury. Buck380 is chiming in on how much fun he had caddying at the LCC during Swing Fest when it comes to alcohol consumption. We'll talk a little Husker baseball. Some more football thoughts. Hail Varsity continues.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Friday edition. We're powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Connor Clark, Bill Dolman, Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, the professor back with us. Let's put to bed the narrative. We've laid out the narrative of some of these programs. Can Miami get it done? Is Texas going to win one finally for the first time since Mac? And Nebraska is what going into year two? I think they're the stock that people are buying. But they're not just talking out loud about it yet. They want to see it actually happen. I think you'll see that with quarterback play and a great defense. So Nebraska is going to be one of those teams that folks jump on. I think you could really see a statement against Colorado, and that might propel Nebraska leading up to that Ohio State game. Way too early, I get it. Statement is what, Bill? Statement is what, Connor?
I think Nebraska is going to be a trendy top 25 vote in the first month of the season because, look, they ought to beat UTEP at home. I'm not sure Colorado's going to have enough players to field a team. So unless Elijah decides, you know, to play. And then if that's the case, then I like our chances. But I think Nebraska, look, you look at the schedule, has every reason to be optimistic about an unbeaten start through the first 6 weeks of the season. And then it gets dicey, right? Mm-hmm. And if Nebraska is unbeaten, I think because, you know, people find Matt Rhule pretty charming and gregarious and charismatic and very open. And those folks with ballots are going to go, yeah, well, sure, it's about time we put Nebraska back into the top 25. Whether they can get the job done and keep it rolling through those remaining games of the season and win their bowl game and go unbeaten like I think they will. But no, I think Nebraska will be a top 25 team by the time October rolls around, if not earlier.
It's difficult to say with Colorado because I feel like people in my generation are so results oriented and that's all they see. So when you look at Colorado, and I understand that there was so much national hype surrounding Deion and his players and just kind of the new era of Colorado Buffs football. And then you saw it against TCU, but then the season progresses, and then I feel like all people who really aren't in this profession, at least around my age, look at Colorado and then they see the 4-8 next to it. And they're like, oh, Colorado isn't that good. And they probably do the same thing with Nebraska.
They weren't.
So I think the statement has to be, honestly, you win your first 7. And I know that's a tall order, and again, very early, but this has been beaten to a pulp, but let's do it again. UTEP, Colorado, Northern Iowa, Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers, Indiana. Those are games that you should probably win. Those are games that you've struggled to win in the past. So I think doing that is a statement, because then the back half of your schedule gets a lot harder, obviously, and that just emphasizes said statement from, you know, the first 7 games.
The narrative's Matt Rhule's doing a hell of a job. That's going to be the narrative going into some thicker games against Ohio State and then that November close. Because that is going to be fun, but it's going to be murderous. Yes. I mean, it is going to be tough, but it's going to be fun. I can't wait for the season. And first things first, spring football, spring game a week away. Billy, you
know,
go ahead.
You know, the Colorado thing, you know, it was a good story last year for a while, maybe a more enjoyable story toward the end. But let's be honest,
we're all throwing Guinness at midnight, cheering for Colorado State.
Oh, yeah. And Stanford, too.
And Stanford and USC. But, you know, as little interest as there was in Colorado football before Deion got there and has electrified them, right? If it doesn't work out there and it flames and he doesn't stay, I believe the interest in Colorado football will be so diminished that it will be worse than it was before he got there.
Well, I feel like don't perform this year, and I hate to turn this into a Colorado segment, but I feel like if they don't perform this year, everybody's just going to be like, this whole Deion thing is a gimmick. And there's a lot of people who think that right now.
Dude's off to the NFL.
That's why I think the interest was and in this new era of college football, this is why I bring it up. It's dangerous to have apathy anyway, but if it doesn't work out and he flames out, he leaves or whatever, and they have a bad season, or if he's there for another year and it just does not get better and he goes, I believe that the interest in that program will plummet significantly, and that cannot happen in this era of college football. Everybody who wants to be at the Super League or the Justice League or whatever it is, right? The Collegiate National Football League, everybody's got to be in and decide we do want to play. And I've said it for years, Nebraska wants to play, but it's going to be a hard thing for people to wrap their heads around when there's a college football, not just a college football union. There's going to have to be one for college basketball. And it can't just be for men's sports. The women are going to have to be right along. And universities are going to have to deal with you. The difference between college, people aren't talking about this, okay? In the NFL, unions deal with pro football and 32 teams. There's a basketball union that deals with 32 teams. There's a baseball union, right? Universities are going to have to deal with either multiple unions or one that cover hundreds of thousands of athletes. So Nebraska and Colorado and Texas and whomever, Nebraska's administration, athletically and academically, is going to be dealing with volleyball players who are unionized, women's basketball players who are unionized, and you can't leave out the other sports who are saying, wait a minute here, we compete too, we're on campus, but you also have football players. So it's universities are going to be dealing with thousands of athletes, perhaps on their campuses, or hundreds of athletes in various sports, who are going to be protected by unions and collective bargaining agreements and salary caps and all of that stuff. And if a place like Colorado doesn't have the stomach or the interest in it, it could really get left behind. And that's why the Deion experiment is exciting for now. But if someplace loses interest and they think it was a gimmick, they're out.
Well, and think about this too, to add on to that. I mean, you were there, I was there in Boulder last year, and you just walk around, and that was the place to be that weekend in college football. Can you imagine if, say, in 2 years' time from right now, and Colorado isn't even uttered? I mean, the total turnaround from exactly what Bill is saying, I mean, if they get left in the dust, it's over. And that goes for any program.
Well, and that's the critical juncture of where Nebraska's at, where – you know, Nebraska in 2 years could be the place to be if Matt Rhule has his say with the way he's building rosters, he's developing talent, and he's recruiting. I mean, it doesn't have to just be that fall in love. Oh, Colorado and Deion, wow, look at this excitement, right? Well, you got to see it through. You got to sustain.
But you also have, you know, like, does Kansas State you know, do they have it? Iowa State, Vanderbilt, you know, are they Wake Forest? If they're still an ACC, you know, who's going to get left behind in all this? Because either they didn't have the momentum going into it. They don't have the interest for it as it happens. And is there going to be a relegation league? They're talking about, you know, the Super 60 and this, and then you've got the other 10 schools or whatever, and they can move all of that stuff. And that's why it's such a precarious position for schools who are not moving toward being all in right now. And you can't be thinking about, do we want to be or not? Because if you're wondering whether or not you want to be in it right now, you're going to be behind when it all starts.
Well, you got to get to a point where you're coveted a little bit, or at least included.
Right.
Think
about that if, when there will be a union, there will be collective bargaining, there will be revenue sharing, and there's going to be some programs, you know, on Nebraska's campus, it's volleyball. On Iowa's campus, it's women's basketball, Tennessee women's basketball, South Carolina women's basketball, Wisconsin volleyball. They're going to be saying, wait, we're putting people in the seats too.
And we're making money.
And so if those volleyball programs are getting revenue sharing, then everybody else in the Big 70 and the Justice League are going to be, our volleyball programs need, and our women's basketball programs and wrestling at Penn State and Nebraska and all that kind of stuff. So we are entering into something that nobody's talking about, because NFL unions deal with NFL teams. You have 30 teams or 25 teams on this campus, and they're all going to be looking at the University of Nebraska dealing with, is there going to be one college athlete union, or is there going to be one for football, basketball?
Is it branched off or not? Let's go back to where we started about smuggling and alcohol.
Find that Boda bag under my. I swear to God.
In honor of Haymarket Park pouring a beer, and I saw Cornhead Lager proudly served at Haymarket. Red Wine 65. His trick was to go with the orange drink, and then the vodka. Dan tweets in at HV Radio. And he's got his Boda bag somewhere, he swears.
Was red wine sneaking over the Elk Creek water from Sandy's?
I don't know.
Into the stadium? That's what that sounds like to me.
Well, just put
no free shout outs.
Every fraternity had its own recipe. I mean, you don't have to get Elk Creek from Sandy's. I mean, come on.
You
go to college. You go to college to come up with ideas.
You call Chef Bill. You call Seth and the crew to get that slinky hammered down. Right.
See what's
Bill
left in the trash.
Are we going to get an appearance out of one Bill Dolman at the baseball game tonight?
Well, now that you know the vote's been cast, maybe.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. We got a minute. We got a minute. And Maryland, 11 of their 24 wins in their last at bat. They're plus 34 when it comes to outscoring their opponents in the eighth inning or later. They are 11-3 in one run games. Dear God, no, or the perfect opponent for Nebraska to get right and get some mental toughness back.
I think Nebraska needs to avoid playing in the ninth inning. So, I just heard the weather guy on KFOR say there's other freeze warning coming in.
That guy sucks.
So maybe the freeze will happen in the seventh, so Nebraska doesn't have to get to the ninth.
Good news is your beer is going to stay cold.
Yes. No koozie needed.
No. Or if koozie. You need to bring some peppermint schnapps, I know how you can do it.
The old peppermint take. That is Bill Dolman. He is the pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, the professor. Catch his podcast, The Average Joe Sports Show. Billy D, we'll have one a little bit later. How's that sound?
All right. See you, boys.
All right. Sounds good. There he is, Bill Dolman. We made him go two segments. Klasburn, he's imaginary and wears red. He's next.